Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Kitchen Garden Magazine podcast, your fortnightly fix of gardening features, advice and chat. Subscribe and follow us now to never miss an episode.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the On the Grapevine podcast with me, Dan Hayes, and my guest today, Francis Tophill.
You're quite rare that, in fact, in many ways, you work for both BBC and ITV, which isn't, funnily enough, a very common thing. It's a little bit more common now, but it's not the most common of things for someone to appear on the two big kind of channels, if you want to call it, terrestrial, yeah, as they say.
Yeah.
How do you find that? I mean, are they different working for two? I mean, obviously, they're very different programs, don't get me wrong. One of you is quite a lot of actual doing, whereas the other one is more presenting or saying, oh, it's a lovely garden, etc. But as you say, how do you find working for either one?
It's just completely different programmes is the main thing. I mean, in terms of filming, it's not too dissimilar.
It take a lot longer to film, I imagine, than that all these things do take a lot longer to film than people honestly think they do.
Yeah, I mean, garden as well takes a lot longer to film than you'd think, considering it's usually just a really nice chat with somebody. It always takes a whole day and usually right until it's getting dark, you know. Whereas Love Your Garden, the pace is much quicker and there are other presenters, so the pressure's not on so much to be presenting all the time. But the main difference with the kind of programming is the team, really. With Love Your Garden, it's been the same team or a large part of the same team for years and years. So it's like any landscaping job where you turn up and it's like your mates. Apart from there's no music, which is annoying. We always say, like, I wish we could have a radio, but you can't.
Oh, you're not allowed?
No.
I couldn't come on the show then because I've always got my thing tuned to radio too.
Yeah, when you're working, you have the radio on in the background. Yeah. It's like a building site without the radio. But it's your mates and you turn up and it's always the same people and the same sort of structure and the actual building, the practical work I like. So the main thing that took me a long time to get used to with the BBC was the different pace, the sort of slower, but your brain is working overtime all the time with Gardener's World. Yep. So it's kind of more tiring in that mental way, but less physically tiring. But I mean, I guess the only sort of difference is in terms of sponsorship. Like on the BBC, you can't say any brands or you have to think about that. Whereas on Love Your Garden, it's sponsored. The sponsorship actually gets the gardens built. The budget that we have to build the gardens is tiny. So people send their products and they send their best products to sort of advertise them. And that is what builds the garden. So it's that sponsorship thing is completely different on the BBC. And having come from an ITV first, that took a while to get my head around the fact that I can't mention anything.
Yeah, but you couldn't say veg truck, for instance.
No.
Although a veg truck is a truck for vegetables, it's a branded name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or even the clothes that you're wearing, you know, I can't wear anything that has a brand. It's just those things that when you're green like me and you've come just from gardening, you don't think about it, you suddenly have to think about all that stuff. So that's the only difference I would say, though. But we, most people who work in both are freelance, so they all work across different programs anyway.
I think it's the thing about it nowadays, isn't it? As you say, is the golden handcuff deal is long gone, unfortunately. They can't can't necessarily afford it. But it's nice that you have the freedom to do what you want. If something comes up that's a bit different, maybe years ago, they'd be like, we want you to go down that avenue, Francis.
Yeah.
Whereas now at least you can say, I want to do something. I mean, you never know. Something may come up. You might think, oh, I'd like to try that.
Yeah,
completely. I'm dancing. That could be you.
Yes, the world better watch out. No, it is funny. I mean, but then because people ask me this every now and again, and I'd never really thought about it, but then now I look and I was watching Channel 4 News yesterday, and there was an advert for Sandy Toksvig doing something with Channel 4, and she's obviously on BBC and BBC Radio. So like, it obviously does happen more now. I notice it now. Where I never would have thought about it before, but it's quite nice from my perspective to get the freedom to do the things I want to do.
Is there any program you'd like to do? Great chance to plug it, Frances.
So I love traveling. Let's do like a bit of Monty Don's Around the World and 80 Gardens, but
that'd be quite nice. Different.
That would be quite nice, wouldn't it? Can you imagine?
Yeah. I think you might have really stolen the idea from you though.
I think he might have. Yeah.
You could tag along with Simon Reeve. He does some good.
This is true.
He's in a different type of travel program. They are all showing you different parts, but I do like watching his things.
I do a lot of. Do you know Woofing?
I'm slightly worried about where this is going to be.
You're not the first to be worried. Woofing stands for Worldwide Opportunities in Organic Farming. It's a kind of charity thing. It was set up in the 70s or 60s in the UK. But no one in the UK really knows what it is. Whereas around the world, loads of people do it. And it's basically you sign up, you pay €20 to join a country. So if you want to go to a specific country or you know you're going to a country, you pay to get the list of all their farmers. And farmers sort of sign up to host you. And then you go and you work for free, but you get your board and your food provided. So I do quite a lot of that if I'm traveling on my own, just because it gives me something to do and you meet nice people. It'd be quite nice to do that, like a program, go up and work in like a spice farm in Kerala and then go do I've done grape harvests in the vineyard in France. To do that, so it's been not quite so much gardening, but more the kind of farming, gardening. Yeah. And there are all kinds of different projects on the Woofing website, but that may be like a different twist on it.
Yeah, I'm glad you've tidied up what Woofing is. I was slightly worried, especially when you said websites. I'm thinking this is going down avenues you don't want to go.
We did not expect this.
But no, it sounds a good idea. It's I know about those things where I suppose it's a bit like the thing when many years ago, I'm a bit older than you, but you used to go and stay with a French family or something. It's a version of that. Yeah. And as you say, you work and you're bored.
Yeah, like ESO or something. Yeah, I mean, it's great because you get to meet amazing people and you can travel around. I know I haven't done it, but I have friends who have traveled around whole continents and they've just arranged their next thing and they stay for a week in a farm. And you can pick the kind of farm you want to do. Like I know herbal medicine farms or perfumers, botanicals for perfumes, livestock farm. There's all kinds of things that you can do. And you can just, you go and you stay with people for a week or two or for a month or two. And
it's Airbnb just for people. And places,
and you have to work.
Yeah, that all depends on how much they expect you to work.
That's true.
Is the question.
They do say though, when you choose where you're going, they have to be really explicit about like whether this is a bit of a holiday or actually we really do actually want you to work quite hard.
Yeah, it sounds like they probably want some quite hard work. Although they might depends if they get BBC or ITV, they might get a bit of a shock if you turn up.
This
they may not
true.
Want to work you quite as hard, just in case. You heard it here first. I'm looking forward to this.
I suppose if they had a camera crew, then they wouldn't. But I want to work. I've had this before. Yeah. People expect you not to want to. It's like, no, I really want to. I actually want to do it.
Your allotment, you get a bit battered on your allotment, don't you?
I'm being honest. It's a really tough spot. It was quite interesting last year because I had my allotment going on the one side. And then with this lockdown ITV program, I had my little garden that I was renting. I was not intending to do anything in that garden because it's only rented. But when they were going to film it and there was nothing to do and we were all locked down, I was like, okay, great. And the comparison between a little sheltered garden with decent soil of what I could grow, and that it's a tiny space, but I grew way more produce in that tiny space than I did on the whole of my allotment, which every plant has to fight for survival on that because it's battered constantly and the soil's dreadful and there's horsetail everywhere, and it's like it makes you realise what, you know, I don't know if you ever get this on your allotment, you just think, I'm rubbish. Like, Monty Don has a massive cabbage and my cabbages are this big and full of caterpillars, and you think, I'm rubbish. But then you think, no, I'm not. The allotment site is a really tough site.
I think it's quite hard on those things, as you say, when you see professional gardeners or on Instagram or that. People tend to show you the very best. And they're not always, I mean, Monty's very good and so was Jeff Hamilton before him. They actually do show you it's not just because I'm a well-known gardener doesn't mean that things go, well, I can't die. You are right. Certainly brassicas, even people who have been growing things good for donkey's years, certain people struggle on certain. We've all got a plant that you just think, I would love it if I could grow one, but I can't. And a lot of it is soil. And a lot of it is time as well, to be honest, I think. Monty's got a lovely allotment, for instance. Let's use him as an instance. But as you say, it gets tended to, because it's on telly, I imagine he lavishes, and I'm sure he's got some gardeners, but he couldn't do it all on his own. It lavishes a lot of time. And as you say, and sometimes it's nice to see that actually a brilliant, fabulous cabbages, but they don't all look like that. And in fact, most of them barely even, I mean, Brussels sprouts are the classic.
Yeah.
Most people like the ground, but most of the time they end up with tiny little marbles. Kind of like, was it worth it?
Actually, and I have to say, people seem to really like that. People don't want my allotment to be this showcase, amazing produce winning, you know, thing. It's actually it resonates with people that they're like, oh, that's what mine looks like, you know. And it's learning as well. I mean, I know that on my allotment I can grow really good beetroots. The beetroots are amazing, but you know, the brassicas struggle. But that's the same with any space. You learn what's good in a particular space and you stop trying. If something's not going to survive, it's not going to survive, no matter what you do.
Yeah, and also, I think the thing I'm sure you'll find down both your allotments you've had, there's certain types of people down allotment. You'll have the old boy or woman who will have a row of 20 beautiful cabbages and they'll end up giving away 18 of them, because how many cabbages can you really eat?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the problem is sometimes people see these fabulous things on Instagram and they're, well, I've got to grow that. But I think they actually lose the fact that actually grow what you eat. Do try new things. But it's like people ask me and I say, you don't sow all your carrots at once.
Yeah.
Do little drill, a couple of weeks later, another one. And I think it's getting that across to people that it's not a show garden per se. If you don't like something, like you say, you obviously like beetroot. Well, I hope you like beetroot, because you're in a lot of trouble.
I love beetroot.
Grow the things you want. And certain things, I also think, is some things, bizarrely, is a lot of effort. And grow your own isn't about necessarily saving you money, because I think it's long been proven that it's going to cost you more, because you've got to include your own time. And I've often said to people, I think that fresh and local and organic is better than certain things. And I think that's what you need to be aiming for. I mean, the amount of times you can have strawberries in the middle of winter, well, they're not going to be grown anywhere local. And they're flown from Egypt and Morocco. And they might say they're organic, but really, are they? If they've travelled however many thousand miles.
And also, they're not wrapped in plastic. This is one of my things. You go to the supermarket, nearly everything is wrapped in plastic. When you go to a farm shop down the road, you'll spend a fraction of the money. Just get a cardboard box full of veg and fruit that's all, like you say, seasonal and has no plastic. Or you grow it yourself and you just have it when it's ready, and no packaging, no air miles and all that. You know, that's really important.
Well, I think it's also, if you grow your own things, the variety is immense. Because obviously supermarkets will grow it for very specific reasons. It's got to taste like a tomato. But then all right, can it spend a week stuck in a little box being wrapped around various things? And I don't think people realise actually that's part of the fun of growing yourself.
Yeah.
Is that there is a whole world of things out there that, colourful carrots have become popular.
Yeah.
They've been around. And as you say, an orange carrot isn't an original carrot. Most carrots were purple.
Yeah. No, that was a Dutch thing, wasn't it, to make them orange.
House of orange,
And they taste better. Things you've grown yourself taste so much better. Because I don't think many people realise how much stuff that we eat that's grown in this country is grown hydroponically now. So it's mainly just pumped with water. And when you've grown something in soil, it has all that sort of nutrient and micronutrient content, which gives it that flavour.
Yeah, it's an earthy feel. Yeah, because down the road from me is a very big strawberry grower. Mm-hmm. Huge. He actually grows the plants, but they're very nice strawberries coming off it. And when I went and had a look around it, I mean, they are huge polytunnels. I mean, they go on for hundreds of metres and there's about 70 of them.
Wow.
And yeah, it's all hydroponics.
Yeah.
They're literally guttering and there's some huge tanks at the end. It's amazing. And don't get me wrong, the strawberries taste wonderful.
Yeah.
But it shows you how those strawberries are grown on such a huge commercial. I mean, he is growing the plants to sell them in the shops.
Yeah.
And a byproduct is he sells to the local people.
Nice.
But you don't really, it's the huge amount of cost and work that goes in to doing it. You can't.
It's so technological. The same just down the road from my mum. There's a huge greenhouse and they do tomatoes. It's all full of tomatoes and they have them, I would say, probably 10 months of the year. They have lovely fresh tomatoes, all hydroponic. Amazing operation. These tomatoes are 12, 15 foot tall. Yeah. And they do taste good, but it's a different world, you know, and people think of farming as being, you know, some old boy on a tractor in a field. And yes, there are those, but actually it's high tech. You know, we have to supply loads of people with as much as possible.
Yeah.
And so that like nice slow pace of growing your own is very different, but you get so much more flavour for it.
It's, I suppose. Spiritual, it could be, not necessarily spirit, it's a thing. Yeah, it's much like a place I worked years ago, had an old-fashioned orchard where basically there were big orchard trees, but you compare it to a new modern one, well, they're no taller than 6 foot and they're basically cordons because they don't want to have to go around on the tractor and shake the tree and things like that. I mean, there are still some in Devon way, some lovely cider makers who will still do it the traditional way.
And they're beautiful. You know, you can't beat a lovely old orchard. I know there's one, I remember going to it when I was a teenager, climbing down Glastonbury Tor, and at the bottom of there, there's a beautiful orchard and sitting in there and having a picnic. And it's magical. But again, just down the road from where I grew up, it's all orchards. It's a huge, huge complex. Kent, obviously, where I grew up, is apples and hops. It's what we're famous for. And they are not like you imagine. They are really massively commercial. They're little spindly trees in big straight rows with wires holding them all up, and they get a massive amount of apples on them. Just not what you imagine.
No, and I don't think you can beat some of these lovely old varieties that you're not going to ever see in a shop. Not going to happen.
No.
And I don't think you can, as you say, to pull an apple off a tree and eat it, even if it's not something particularly special, you can't, because you won't quite get that instant kind of, whether it's a sharp taste, you just can't until you give it to someone and say, well, this is literally just come off a tree, there's a been nowhere, done nothing. You cannot actually beat the taste of it. But
no,
and they, I think things nowadays, the magic of things like you do, you look into it and then they've created trees that we actually almost anyone can have one. You might only get two apples a year, but everybody, the beauty of them, the technology, I suppose, in these things is that they have created so many variants that you can have a lot of things in your garden, even a small garden, that maybe even 10 years ago would just not have been an option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's the wonderfulness. Because is that what you've got? You did it because you've got a degree in horticulture.
Yeah, with plantsmanship. So it's a kind of botany.
Yeah, that was what I was looking for. Yeah,
it's not botany. I couldn't say I'm a botanist. Definitely a horticulturist, it's horticulture with very much a botanical evolutionary kind of spin on things.
Yeah, because I imagine. I went to college a long time ago, and I dare say it's all changed since then. Because when I went in the very late 80s to college, and I just think it's changed a lot. It was kind of a bit of a farmer type thing doing there. Whereas now it's actually, as you say, I think the RHS has helped that a lot. It's kind of opened up that actually you can have a career, as you say, because lots of people around here call themselves gardeners, but they're not gardeners. They couldn't tell you a daffodil from a dandelion. No.
I think there's a huge world of horticulture and gardeners that turn up and like jobbing gardeners who maybe have no qualification, and that's fine because you can learn it all on the ground. Yeah. But you can't just decide one day to be a gardener and then rock up in someone's garden. And, you know, you can cut the lawn, probably. You can maybe do some pruning, but pruning is really definitely a skill that takes a lot of time to learn. And it can give it a bad name, or a name where people think it's just for people who can't do anything else, which is really unfortunate, because actually historically gardeners would have been really like a highly trained craft. And then there's also all this science as well. There's kind of bioprospecting. You can do pharmaceuticals that come from botanicals. There's research, there's conservation, there's ecology, there's masses of stuff that horticulture can be. And just to always push it down this one thing of like, if you can't achieve anything else, then you can push a lawnmower around it. It's really dumbing down, actually, and unfair on what gardeners do, because it's a real skill.
Yeah, well, I was, without being rude, the sort of people who maybe are in IT and got made redundant and thought, oh, I quite like gardening. I tend to refer to them as hoers, mowers, and blowers, because they're fine with that, just keeping your garden looking tidy. But the amount of customers over the years who tell me after I've taken over their garden, oh, that's never flowered in 10 years.
Yeah.
Think why? Because I think it's 85% of flowering shrubs flower on last year's growth. There are a few things that don't get me wrong. I'm not going to list any, just in case I get it wrong. But this is, as you say, I think it's one of those things, it's finding your thing. And as you say, there is a whole world out there. And I think you can actually properly make a career out of horticulture now. And we're not just talking that you have to basically all you're set to just gardening, because it's not the most fun thing in some weathers, let's be honest.
But I don't mind it. I quite like getting rained on. It's, as you said earlier on, it's cooling down when it's hot. That's the hard bit.
I find it, my favourite time of year is probably autumn, or this time of year. I quite like it as well. It's not too hot. I mean, I was laying a patio today, so I didn't particularly enjoy it soaking my patio.
No. No, that's quite disheartening.
But you can't get out of it. It's all fun. No.
All My Reads gives you unlimited access to more than 100 specialist books, from history to mystery, rockets to royals, planes to trains, bikes to biographies, and much, much more. Access the digital books across multiple devices, including your desktop, tablet, and phone. All My Reads is just $4.99 per month. Visit allmyreads.com to find out more. Browse the extensive range of titles, and try your first month for just 99p. Get ready to browse and begin.
So your books, how many books? You've released three books.
It's three books. I've written three books, and I think the publishers rejigged one of them and re-released it. So I've written three. I see
you've got, they got you a container garden and the container garden handbook.
That's the one, the handbook. It was just a rejigging of the container gardener. So yeah, I've written three books.
But that's why not, to be honest?
I really enjoy it. I'm really dyslexic, and the one thing I thought I would never do as a career is writing. Yeah. And yet, I really enjoy it. It's a really nice thing to do. The research is great. I mean, you learn so much from doing it. And then also just consolidating your ideas. And then just that stupid thing of you have a book in your hands and you're like, you know, one day when I hopefully get to a ripe old age, I'll have this and I'll always be able to look at it, you know. It's great.
It is not. Well, because one of my interviews, they've started to be done, as yours will, in the Chickasaw Garden. So I brought that magazine and it'll be pressed in a frame and left there forever, because I didn't do it to get published. But it's just nice to suddenly see your little idea you had a couple of years ago. Suddenly it's there in print.
Totally. It's just
nice. There's no money in it or anything like that. It's just suddenly nice, and people, and I don't know, people take on a strange thing when you said you've written something, whether it be a book or an article. I don't know. It's almost like they look at you as if to say, oh, you're not as stupid as I thought, maybe.
I had a funny thing the other day because I'm working on another book, and someone said to me, well, haven't you run out of things to say now? Like, what, how can you possibly write four books on gardening? Surely one covers it.
There's always room for one more book.
Yeah, there are some slightly different angles you can go from.
You have to think, your latest one, it was Rewild Your Garden. How did that come about? Was that just kind of you realising, actually, we maybe overmanage gardens?
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, well, with all of it, it's a conversation with the publishers. They commission it and we have a chat about what they would quite like. And I think that was quite soon after Isabella Tree's Rewilding book came out. And that was, so they were recognizing that this was a thing and spoke to me about it. And I was just like, I really want to do it. But it was interesting because the publishers didn't really understand what rewilding was. What they wanted me to write a wildlife gardening book. And I was really like keen to say, look, I'm not, I mean, obviously there is wildlife in it, but I was saying, rewilding is a thing. And I really want to talk about that because it is, as you say, that realization of the control that we feel we should be sort of exerting over the landscape, which I would argue, and increasingly, you know, from having been 15 years ago trained and done my apprenticeship and like you dig this and you weed that and you know, very much the old school way of thinking, it's taken me a long time to slowly unpick that in my own gardening and on my allotment. It's kind of an experimental place where I try out these ideas, and the more I do it, the more I think actually I really like not doing so much. I really like stepping back and letting nature do it, and the weeds growing up look amazing. I mean, we pay a lot of money to buy in amazing ornamental grasses from sort of South America or North America, and yet if you let wild grasses in this country grow in amongst wildflowers, you have a really similar effect, only it's giving a lot more benefit to the local sort of fauna. So it's just, I think it's the natural progression of where naturalistic gardening is going, is to kind of, if not entirely make it weeds, but marry weeds with useful plants and with non-native plants, and have this lovely kind of harmony of it that we just don't have quite so much control. You know, we just let nature have a bit back.
Well, I think the thing about what is a weed? A weed is just actually a plant in the wrong place. I mean, completely. You wouldn't want columbine running around your whole garden, but it's a very attractive flower.
Or horsetail.
I call it mare's tail. It is horse's tail, but I call it mare's tail. And I think it came from a mare, obviously horse, but I always thought it came from nightmare because...
it is a mare, isn't it? A total mare.
You can never you can weaken it and it's dissuading, but you will never get rid of it.
You'll never get rid of it.
No, it's a prehistoric weed.
But it's the same with anything else. There are ways, and I've learned ways to kind of not get rid of it. The more I dig it, the more it seems to come back. So I've stopped digging it. But I find it doesn't compete that well with other things. So in my herb bed, which is all perennial herbs, it doesn't compete well. So now that I've got big fennel, lavenders, hyssop, myrtle, other things, it sort of is very spindly in amongst it and really not offensive. Whereas in my annual veg, when I'm clearing it, it comes back with a vengeance. So it's learning. So, you know, maybe I should grow more perennial veg rather than annual veg, and that will weaken the horsetail. So yeah, no, it's with anything, you just learn whether you can get rid of it.
Yeah, gardening is learning. No one knows everything. It's like we're all kind of GPs in the garden. I mean, we've got a general knowledge of gardening, but you need to, if you've got certain things, then you need to go and see a specialist.
And there are things that you've perfected. Like if I'm working for a client, I would never just let loads of weeds grow up unless they specifically wanted me to. But on my allotment, and I'm sure you're the same with yours, that you're kind of a bit more liberated to try things that you're not sure of. So on my allotment, I did a kind of hugel culture experiment last year to sort of see if that was something that would help with the couch grass and the mare's tail, horse tail. And it was interesting because it did, it really weakened it, but where I weakened it, I then found loads of bindweed growing up that I hadn't ever known was there because the horsetail had outcompeted it the year before. So it's like these experiments that you try, you would never do that if you're being paid by someone to go and do it in their garden. But now I know that for myself, I would feel confident to go and try that in a paid situation and know how to approach it. So it's, you're always learning, and that's the joy of it really, isn't it?
Well, that is the joy of it. And I think that's why you can find gardening at any age. And I mean, as we've seen the last, well, it's going on for a year now. It is getting on for a year now, unfortunately. As you say, the interest in gardening has been massive. Yeah. And I think part of the problem is you've got to try and keep hold of, I don't think you're going to lose some people because it was a thing there at home. I've got nothing else to do in my life, or I'm actually going to do the garden. But it would be nice if we could keep that thing, and then maybe use that to, I mean, obviously peat in compost is a massive, has been for a long time, it's not a recent thing, pyroids in compost, etc. Mm-hmm. And it's only really through the public buying. I mean, you can have all your well-known people saying, oh, this, that, and the other. Ultimately, they're only affected by their back pockets.
Yeah.
And it takes the people not buying it is the only way they'll change. It doesn't matter if Monty says it's not good or it's good, it's not good. That doesn't affect it ultimately. All they're worried about is how much money can I make?
Of course. So, and giving the option, you know, you go to a nursery, there's usually one peat-free option and loads of other options. You know, you have the seed cutting compost, you have a general purpose compost, all different, you know, ericaceous, and they're usually peat-based, whereas we need to start getting to a point when we're encouraging nurseries by saying, I'm only going to buy your peat-free option. So give me a seed and cutting peat-free option, give me an ericaceous peat-free option, you know, and that's, I think, where we should be aiming to get. But obviously that's industry that dictates it. And as you say, that's money that dictates to industry what they're going to stock, because customers, you know, we vote with our purses, don't we?
Well, yeah. And I think there are some very good options out there.
Yeah.
But it's got to be affordable. And that's the problem, is if it's being made on a small scale.
Gardening all over, isn't it? I think this is, people often ask, and everyone's wondering now that we've got all these new people into gardening, how do we keep them? But it's inaccessible to so many people because of money. You know, I often kind of joke about it. I've chosen one career that I have a huge barrier to for my own self, because I can't afford land. You know, buying land is crazy money, and I can't afford a house that has a big enough garden. So it's that thing of like making it accessible and relevant to people is the key thing. And it's been relevant to people this year because they've had time, and usually everyone's working so hard that they don't have the time. So it's just kind of like reassessing, how do we make it relevant? Do we turn community spaces into places that people can use and have ownership over? Is it councils making way more land available for allotments? You know, I think that's where it comes into its own, to give people access to it. That's how we'll get them to stay with gardening.
I must say, my local council, I mean, admittedly, I've only just moved house a few weeks ago. I didn't move very far, but I've changed council. But in Hampshire, I have noticed in Hampshire, they're playing on a different tune, but they're basically letting their urges grow, and you can sponsor a roundabout, and it's basically...
Oh, amazing.
But it's very good. I mean, they're doing it in a way that makes them sound, but it's obviously a way that I'm not quite sure they can afford to do it like they did anyway. But it's nice that they're doing it. And as you say, and do it. And as you say, there's lots of them. I mean, it's quite wooded around where I live anyway, but they're doing lots of these things. And I think the community projects will work, because you meet some fabulous... I used to work on Chobham Common, and some of the most knowledgeable people are actually not experts. They're keen amateurs. And you meet some fabulous people. And as you say, and they don't do it for the money. They do it for the love of it. And I think that's what you get with those kind of community projects. It's the same as an allotment, is you meet such a wide array of people at allotments that you probably would never meet in any other walk of life.
And you learn so much.
Another thing, but you do meet some wonderful people down allotments. Yeah, some quite quirky people, I suppose, would be the saying. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, admittedly, I've had to give up my allotment last year because I've moved to a house with a garden.
Okay, and that's good.
Well, it's been interesting having my allotment in my garden, because there's going to be certain things like, do I really want to get on the bike, ride down to my allotment, dig up some potatoes, pull some carrots? Because then it suddenly it's not just a kind of 5 second thing, it's a kind of...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Normally ends up being half an hour because my allotment was right at the bottom, which means I have to walk past everybody. And what do people do? Right. Hello, Dan. And you just get there and you think, you look at your watch, 20 minutes later, and I've barely moved 20 yards from the front gate.
Yeah,
so it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But yeah, I will miss some of the characters quite simply.
Yeah. That community, you do miss them. I also find that it's quite a lot of, like, it gets you going there, because if you don't turn up to water or if your allotment gets overrun, you're always in the back of your mind aware that your neighbours will be kind of going, which is quite a nice bit of pressure. It can sometimes feel a lot of pressure. If you've got loads of other stuff on, it can be actually quite stressful just trying to keep it looking good. But it's that good little bit of pressure because it means that you actually do turn up and you do it. But I suppose if it's in just outside your back door, then you will, because you'll be there all the time anyway.
Well, I will be, and my wife will soon tell me if it's not looking very nice anyway.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be interesting. It would be nice because I've often dreamt of it. Now, whether it turns out that the dream in reality is not, often things, as you say, you dream about, it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
Like you said, Barbados, it must be wonderful sitting on the beach, sipping like lemonade and things. The reality is it's never quite like the movies show you quite simply, but there's a lot more to it. But it's got to be interesting. But I definitely think it's the way the world's got to go, quite simply. Yeah. But as you say, we need more land. Without being preachy, there's too many people on the planet to sustain what we've got. Now, people moan about GM crops and things. Unfortunately, that's the only way that they can support the people.
Mm.
And I think we've got to get back to that kind of thing that actually, I suppose it's very kind of COVID is, if you think to the war, it is. You basically, people turn their gardens into a lot. The idea of a garden or pottages, you can grow vegetables amongst the plants. There is no reason why you have to have an allotment.
It's really strange, isn't it, that people want to always separate it. That was my big thing with the garden that I built this spring was actually, it was the first opportunity I had to try out my ideas that I've had on allotments and in other people's gardens and in shared gardens and stuff. You're always compromising. But this was like my first time at just going, right, I'm going to do it this way, my way. And nearly everything in there was edible and it looked beautiful. There was literally no compromise on aesthetic versus useful. And that's the way I've always just approached gardening. I don't see why we need to make a differentiation between this is the useful area and this is the pretty area, because actually loads of useful plants are beautiful. And it's just a different approach where you say, well, we don't have masses of space. We don't all have to grow produce only, but if we can grow as much produce as we can, then we take a huge pressure off the agricultural industry, and we're eating healthy food, we're eating exactly what we know has gone into it. You know, we're not buying things that have been potentially sprayed with loads of chemicals or whatever. We don't always know, but if we've grown it ourselves, then we do know. So it's that thing of turning, as you say, verges and roundabouts and public spaces and our own little gardens into productive spaces that also look amazing and that everyone can help themselves to the produce that's there. I just think that has to be the way that we move. We have to move in that direction, or, you know, as well as the kind of wilding and native flora and not cutting verges and allowing the wildlife to live there as well. So it's that marriage of those two things. And we've gardened so long and this idea that there's got to be a straight edge and little neat borders, and we have the pretty things there and we have the useful things there, and we feed that with that chemical and we spray those insects with that chemical. And it's like we've automatically done this for such a long time. It takes quite a lot to retrain yourself and sort of stop and question it and think, actually, why am I doing this? And once you do, you realize that we don't need to. And if we all stop doing it, then it will be much better and more balanced.
But I also think the thing is, it's perfectly fine to make mistakes in gardening. No one knows it. And it is actually maybe part of the fun of it is actually, have we lost the bit that it's a bit like anything. I've got teenage daughters and you don't want them to not make mistakes, but yeah, unfortunately, the only way to learn sometimes is to learn the hard way. And that, what a wasted year of crops, or that thing just doesn't grow there. Well,
yeah,
yes, the experts could have told you that, but is it sometimes?
But they may be wrong. You know, you have a lot of stuff, and when we're doing garden as well, particularly, you know, there's a lot of, you feel a lot of pressure to get it right. I remember doing a thing about pruning once, and we spent such a long time researching everything, all these different species, shrubs this couple had in their garden, and it was like, oh god, and I think it was the autumn, and we're going, oh, should we do this in the autumn, but will it bleed, and oh, I don't know, and there were a few things we just didn't do because we were like, oh, there's different information, we need to get it really right, and there's a lot of pressure because it's garden as well. Do you know, we have to give the right information. And then the next week I watched garden as well. Then Monty was pruning apples and he said, the right time to prune is when you have a saw in your hand, because you never know when you're going to have a saw in your hand again. And you may as well just get it done whilst you're there. And it's like, yes, exactly. You know, actually we get so bogged down with the right way. And there are so many different ways and in different areas, different climates, different soil types, things work differently, and if it works for you, then do it. And if it does, it doesn't matter what the books say.
Well, it doesn't, and also sometimes the wrong plant grows in the wrong place. For instance, I've cut back hundreds of apple trees over my time, and the amount of time you're meant to paint them with a kind of bitumen type sealer at the end, but yes, you try and do it, but it depends if you've got an old tree. If you've got an old 40-year-old orchard, and let's say you need to prune them, the chances of you killing the tree off are actually, plants are actually an awful lot more, especially if they're established, shall we say. Mm-hmm. They're an awful lot more harder than you think. I mean, a classic would be, look at buddleias. They always appear. They knock down houses. They build these lovely posh flats. What always appears up within a couple of years through the kind of, they have that nice block paved driveways. What always appears up? A buddleia. Look up the half the side of an old Victorian building. And then it'll be a tiny crack, and what'll be growing out of it? A buddleia. And you think you shouldn't, nothing should survive there. There is no soil there or anything. Nature finds a way. And I think that's the thing about it.
Yeah.
Nature finds a way, and it always will do. And I often think actually nature will do what nature wants. We can sit there and pretend that we're kind of, oh, we're doing this and we're doing that. But actually, I honestly think if it thought of the human species and thought, well, you're a pest I could do without. It would, well, look at the current situation we're in. Unfortunately, it actually shows you how very vulnerable we are as a species. We are quite destructive. We do a lot of good, don't get me wrong. We're not a terrible race. But it just shows you how actually it's a very tiny little tilt either way. And suddenly you shows you how quite really insignificant, I suppose, is the word. And we and I think you will get that with the food in the world as well. We're pretty insignificant. And if we keep pushing too much, it will tilt the other way and we will have a problem. And then there'll be another problem, as you say.
I think so. I think a lot of people have had that perspective over the last year and quite liked it, you know, actually.
Yeah.
Not that it's a good thing and it's been horrific and it's been awful for so many people and, you know, destructive. But there's been those glimmers where you think, oh, actually, this could be the beginning of change. And it shows us how fragile things are, and that can be good. That can galvanise people to do better. You know,
I think that's what you need, is to galvanise the people. And I know it sounds a bit rhetoric, but that's what you need. And I'm sure that was a programme by dear old David Attenborough, Fragile Earth. And I think you need to realise that yes, it isn't. Fossil fuels will run out one day. It's not just people saying that, and it may not be in our lifetimes. But if you've got children, you need to think about your children, your grandchildren. And I think that's the secret of it. It's not just thinking about my own 10 years' time. We need to become a bit more altruistic, I suppose would be the word, and actually think there's going to be generations beyond me who I'll never meet. I'll probably never meet my great-grandchildren if I'm lucky enough to have some. But you have to sit there and think, we're only custodians, like a house. You're only a custodian of a house. Once you sell it, someone else takes it on, they might totally rearrange it. But that's the thing of it. We're only custodians on the planet. Who knows, in 500,000 years' time, the human race might be gone. The ants might take over the world. And I think that's, But I think this is how you need to think a little bit more outside the box, I suppose.
Thinking about other people and also thinking about other species as well. I feel awful when you think about all these, you know, plants, animals, fungi that get destroyed by what we do because we want to build or, you know, it's dreadful. So I think it's that thing of trying to think really holistically about everything rather than just thinking about, we all get very insular, don't we? Yes. I suppose we're all stuck in our houses, so maybe it's natural that we would.
Yeah, but, and I think also, I don't think people think about plants as creatures.
No.
Not creatures that move. Well, they do move, but very slowly, and they're not triffids, but actually they are. As you say, without plants, without greenery, we're stuffed, to be honest, because you wouldn't be able to breathe. That's what creates Earth is a... We're not quite, but Earth is a pretty, whether people say, oh, there must be other Earths, there must be other little green aliens out there. There probably is. The law of facts, but how far you'd have to go. But we are pretty an amazing little, we are just perfectly far enough from a sun that's warm enough and we can sustain life. And whatever happens, we are a pretty amazing little speck of dust in the atmosphere.
Absolutely.
And I think people should remember, actually, we're very lucky. And as you say, I mean, I know we only know of our existence as such, but yes, it is a pretty amazing thing. And it takes a bit like the human, I mean, even having children, it takes an immense amount of things just to fit in the right place. People take it for granted. Oh, yeah, children. Yeah, children. Well, actually, no, they can't. And it's I think Dr. Robert Winston did it. You need an amazing amount of things just have to click, and they have to click perfectly. And I just suppose, I guess the world forgets how it's not as simple as it looks. The biology of plants tells you that. It takes an immense amount of things just to be how it is. And maybe we need to appreciate that more. Maybe the pandemic has done that for us.
Maybe. I know with writing the rewilding book, I was really keen to include plant species because so many wildlife gardening books always talk about the insect and animal species and birds and how you can provide for them. But they don't ever talk about the plants are like just a means by which you bring in the wildlife. And it's like, actually, the plants themselves they need protecting as well. There are loads of species of plants that need protecting. And also we're learning about plants now. There are things that we didn't realize that, you know, that the plants can show that they have kind of memory. Yeah. And, you know, they're doing all kinds of experiments into how plants almost have a sentience. They decide to grow a certain way. They can remember certain things. And it's like, how do they remember? Do they have brains? Well, no, not that we know of, but maybe that, you know, that there is, I think there's a lot more to plants and communication and that side of things that we just don't understand. You know, we should not overlook plants.
No, I think that I know that I know some tree surgeons, and they say trees know when another one's been cut down. Now, it may be not a brain and they talk, but it's a chemical. We're all chemical based.
Yeah, yeah.
Grass cutting, it makes me laugh. There's people go, oh, I love the scent of freshly cut grass. Well, actually, it's sending out a chemical reaction to tell the grass to take all the nutrients back into the roots, basically driving your head cut off. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, but people just think, oh, it's a lovely smell. But no, it's just a chemical reaction of the grass saying, right, nutrients get into the roots because someone's cutting our head off. So as you say, oh, no, there is that. Whether we'll ever know, but they obviously think they are a species of their own, and they obviously can communicate in ways, but maybe not in our communication ways, as in talking.
It's obviously different, but there is some almost a sort of sentience. I don't know. Yeah. Like when people always say that question, like, oh, what would you come back as if you could come back as anything? Yeah. And I would always say a bird, but as I got older, I think maybe I'd come back as a tree, like an oak tree, live for hundreds of years. And I don't know, I've had a few things when you listen to the wind in the branches and you think, what have these trees seen? Are they, you know, like over the hundreds or even thousands of years that some trees can live? Imagine the difference of the worlds. You know, it'd be amazing to just be there unmoved, just letting it all flow by and watching it all happen. They're amazing species.
You often get them yew trees in churches because they are generally, there's one near me in Godalming, I think it's I went there once, it's 1500 years old.
Yeah,
you just sit there and think, that's seen kings and queens and things like that, and the amount of change that's seen, yet all it's ever done is stood there and watched.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing.
Yeah, you need to sit sometimes. You do actually need to. Often nicer early in the mornings, crisp morning, just actually listen to everything. And I think maybe that's what people have done in lockdown. People have actually walked in their garden, didn't turn on a radio like us workers in the garden, and actually just listened to it and realised, even in the middle of London, for instance, or any major city, you don't just have to live in the wilds of Herefordshire or something, but actually how much the birds and everything around you, and just breathe it in almost. And I think that's probably what people have maybe felt more about gardening. Gardening obviously is enjoyable, but actually nature is around you and it's free.
Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of people are worried about, going back to normality and then losing that. And yeah. I think, you know, it's quite important that we've all got this glimmer of how busy we all were before. How busy. And now to be able to hold on to that little bit of calm would be quite nice.
Yes, I think, and you often see people say, oh, it was better back in the 60s and people have more time. But I think there's a lot more pressures on us and that doesn't help. But I do believe, yes, you should basically take time out, even if it's 10 minutes, just go and sit and see what's around you. And you might even notice a few things that you'll certainly notice nature around you if you sit there and look at it. And I think that's certainly the way forward. Right. I've got to ask you about your, I remember last year, shall we say you have a quirky fashion sense sometimes, and your cardigan kind of made national kind of, well, maybe not national press, but certainly created a buzz on the internet, and I think it would have been Instagram, probably.
Yeah.
So it's quite nice, because that does blend in with allotments, that kind of reuse, but is it just the way you've always been, that kind of like, if I like it, I'll wear it. I'll use it. I've got a use for that.
Yeah, I mean, I find it a funny thing talking about your fashion sense. Like, I just never thought about it. Just wear what I wear. And like, dungarees are good for working because you don't get a builder's bum when you bend over. I mean, that's literally it.
I have a pair I work in as well. I'm of no thing of fashionista. You can ask for why. I wouldn't know how to marry colours or anything. I just tend to say, oh, it looks right and it's comfortable. So I'm in no way picking on you there, because I'm exactly the same as you.
Well, no, it's a funny thing, because I think that especially as a woman in gardening TV, you are expected, like, you know, on, you know, you're expected to wear makeup. I know that on Love Your Garden, we have a makeup artist. You know, we have hair and makeup when we're gardening, landscaping all day in the mud, you know. Like, I wouldn't bother. But it's a very... I don't want to say it's a sexist industry, but there is definitely a thing where you're like, as a woman, you are expected to have that. And when we first started Love Your Garden, we used to get given what clothes to wear as well. Just, I don't think the men did. So I started off coming into TV wearing not my clothes, wearing what someone else told me to wear. And then after a year or two, you sort of start sneaking in a bit of your own thing. And just because it makes you feel, because you feel comfortable in your own clothes. And it's a strange thing for people. Maybe it's that confused thing of wearing one half of what someone's told me and the other half of mine. But people have said this about my fashion, both in my personal life and on TV. And I always just think I just dress like everyone else.
Your own fashion, you've made your own. Otherwise, without being everyone would look the same.
Part
of the fun of it.
The thing I did that bring to the first series of Love Your Garden, that was my first ever TV thing, was my yellow wellies, because I was a student at the time and they were the cheapest steelies I could get. $11.50 for some fisherman's wellies. That was it. And I wore them and it was like everyone thought it was like my thing. It's like, no, they're just really cheap.
Am I right in thinking you were at uni or college? I don't know how they quite, I'm never quite sure. I never went to university, so I don't know quite how you differentiate. You were working, you appeared on telly while you were still in many ways studying.
I was in my second year, so I'd done my apprenticeship and 2.5 years of actual gardening in a Lutyens garden, and then went to Edinburgh. And so I was in my second year of my degree when I got the job on Love Your Garden. It was really bizarre, because you'd be like, you know, one day I'd be in a lecture, and then maybe in the pub with friends, and then the next day I'd be in a 5-star hotel, which I'd never been in before. I'd never been in a 5-star hotel.
Very hard for you. How did you manage?
I remember on my 23rd or 24th birthday, sitting in a 5-star hotel room, drinking a beer, and just looking around me and thinking, what's happened in my life? Everything's gone weird.
Maybe it's a nice jug of beer type thing.
Yeah, probably, to be honest. When I was that age, I probably did. No, but it was, you know, and like watching Alan Titchmarsh mowing the lawn. I had a few
hours of the experience.
Yeah, you're just like sitting there 1 minute. But it's weird because you feel like you've known Alan Titchmarsh your whole life on the one hand. And then on the other hand, you're just like, you know, 2 months ago, I was just a student. Yeah. And now here I am and you're here and you're chatting to me. Very, very surreal.
I think that is the thing though, with well-known people, shall we say, is you have to get over the thing they are just normal people. They just happen to be well-known faces.
Totally. But I've never been massively starstruck. I think it's a thing where you're like, actually, it's Alan just is Alan, you know, and he's the same on screen as he is off screen. And he's lovely. You know, he's been so supportive and helpful. And, you know, me and Katie, my co-presenter, had never done it before we started on that. And he never made us feel in any way that we were less good, or you know, he just he never told us what to do. He just always was really supportive and just like exactly as you would expect him to be, and exactly as you already think that he is and that you know him and he's an old friend because you've seen him so much on the TV. It's a strange thing. He's just Alan and there he is in front of you.
I think if you are generally a nice person, which he strikes me as very much being, I think it comes out, and people buy people. They don't buy products, they buy people.
And I think, and this is what Alan has always said to me, that if you try and sell something, if you try and be something, you're going to fall down. The only thing you can ever be consistently is yourself. Yeah. And that's what he's done and that's what he is. Yeah. And that's what, you know, I'm not, it involves a lot more acting than you realise because you have to do things over and over again. Yes. But I'm not an actor and none of us are actors. And so we just... We're just all ourselves. And I think if you can see someone's trying to be something that they're not, that's when they're going to come a cropper, really.
Well, yes, you can't act 24/7. And no. I actually think people like, not that you're making mistakes, but people like it if you've got an accent or a certain thing, you say a certain thing, or we all have certain tics, I suppose you call it, certain things we do. I think that's what makes you human. And I think that's what makes people warm to people, is not... It's not what you look. You don't have to conform to look like a certain thing. And I think that's what makes people, and people like you for it. You may well think, why do they like that?
Well, some people hate it, don't they? But you're never going to please everyone. One of my good friends used to always tell me off for the way I said hello. I remember he always said, whenever Alan goes away and then comes back, you always say, hello. I don't even notice. Just go, hello.
Like dummies,
He always used to tell me off, like, you've got to say hello differently. You just don't. You just come down.
That's how you are, and people will probably almost say, "That's Frances Tophill." Yeah, she does that. Hello.
That weird. Hello.
Yeah, yeah. Hello. Trying to get the children's TV show or something. I think that's why people like you, because you are yourself. I've chatted to you now. We're not. There aren't millions of people watching. I don't think there are. I'd have to ask Ben. He might be sending us across the world. But yeah, this is the thing. And you seem very much like you are. On the TV, for instance, that would be the only place I've ever seen. Yeah. I'm not stalking you, so I wouldn't know. But you seem like a genuinely nice, down to earth person. And
yeah, I mean, you don't show everything. You definitely there are definitely parts of my professional person. But
yeah,
I definitely can be more challenging in my real life. But that's again, it's quite a nice thing to have, like this persona. I am me and I can't pretend to be anything else.
No.
But there's I quite like my privacy, so quite like that I can have a private me that people don't ever get to see, which is quite nice for me because I think if it all starts to bleed into one, you can believe that you're, I don't know, I it can be a strange that, thing. I quite like being normal. I like normal days and then non-normal days, you know?
I imagine if you're incredibly famous, like Tom Cruise, for instance, you can't get much more famous than him. I quite like him as a thing, and I think what people forget about people like that is they're controlling multi-millionaire. I mean, there was a thing about the COVID. Oh, you've got to be wearing your mask. I don't think people realise. Oh, what's he getting so hard? There's hundreds of people relying on him keeping a film going. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest problem with, let's say, those kind of superstars is you start to believe what they say about you, and you start thinking, yeah, God, I am amazing, aren't I? And I think, I suppose, yeah, the more famous you are, the harder it probably becomes to keep, basically, you've got to keep your feet on the ground and realise that you are no more exceptional necessarily than the person down the road. It's just you've had good opportunities.
Fame's a strange thing. Like I wouldn't say I'm particularly famous, and I quite like that. I wouldn't want to get famous, and I think especially when you're people like us, you know, we get into this because we like gardening. You don't want the fame. The fame is a strange thing that you sort of feel like people feel they know you and they don't, and it's, you don't get into it for that. If you do, you're getting into it for the wrong reasons. And so actually it's really nice to just have that personal private thing where you're like, you know, it's great that I get to do this amazing job and meet amazing people and chat to them and learn so much from them, but I would never want to lose the real me and the thing at home, where you're just not like that. You know, it would be awful to lose yourself to that.
It's nice that you are famous if you're into gardening, for instance. If you like World Garden as well, then yes, you are famous.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot of people. But like, I could tell my mum, oh, I chatted to Frances Tophill. She'd know, that's the girl. She might get me confused with the other one, which she did. And I went, no, that's Katie Rushworth. And she went, right, what's that one? It's a nice bit, I think. It is nice that, but you, in theory, you could walk down the shops, and in all fairness, probably 3 out of 10 people might recognise you, but you'll probably find other people go, who? Garden as well? Bloody hell, do you want to watch that?
Yeah. No, I mean, sometimes people kind of look at you weird, but like you said, it may be just because I'm dressed really oddly, or it could be because they kind of go, is that, but literally that's it. You know, occasionally someone will stop me and say, oh, I know you from the gardening programs. And you're like, oh, hello. And that's literally it. But that doesn't happen much. And I like that. I like just being able to walk into town and just be me, as I always have been, you know. And if it started to encroach where you couldn't do those things anymore, that would be quite a scary moment, I think.
It must be strange. I've seen plenty of famous people. I normally think they say TV adds weight or something, or makes you look bigger than you actually are.
Mm.
And I've seen plenty of famous people, and I normally think, I mean, I'm quite tall, at 6'4", and I tend to think, you look at them, and then you do, you kind of walk, is that, that can't be such and such, because he's like a big film star, he must be massive. I walked into, in Legoland, Tom Hardy, you know the actor?
Oh, yeah.
I literally walked into him as he was going into the toilet. He came out and I literally walked into him. And a lovely bloke. I said, oh, sorry. And he's like, oh, sorry, like that. And I thought, when I walked away, I thought, that's Tom Hardy. But I thought he'd be a really big, muscly bloke. Well, of course, he's nowhere near my height. And he's not, I'm sure he's very muscly. But, and I sat there thinking, is it him? Is it? And then I looked on the media and there was some, I think they're opening the hotel there. And there were loads of celebrities there. I missed most of them out. He's the only one I kind of went, well, he had a very long beard. I just kind of thought, Tom Hardy, was that just a vagrant? It's a strange thing, but I can imagine after a while it gets quite annoying that you can't think, I just like to go and bloody do something. I mean, you can't for the last year ago, but I just like to go and browse around Marks and Spencer's about someone going, can I have a selfie?
It must be awful, mustn't it?
Yeah.
It must be awful. I get a glimpse of it.
For a day. Yeah, a day, and then maybe just switch it off and go, mate.
I don't even think, I've spoken to people who've had people, like, if they're on the phone and someone will come and just yank the phone away from their ear and go, can I have a selfie? And they've just been like, no, because you're really rude. You know, I would hate that. Imagine it would be really annoying. You just want to kind of go out in your pyjamas and get a loaf of bread without anyone.
Well, yeah, this is it. But you lose that. Well, I suppose that's the thing about being, are you public property? Whereas you've probably got that lovely mix where, oh, there's that lovely girl of garden as well. Oh, she does that thing with Alan and David. Type thing where you're not necessarily considered public property as such.
No, and it's not. It's a really
you're
nice.
You're not an actress as such. You are yourself, and I suppose it's a problem when you become, you portray a part. People often believe. I mean, you often hear about it. Bad, they pay baddies in movies. People seem to start thinking that they are that person. They're kind of like, no, I'm acting type thing.
And that's
where I suppose you're lucky in that sense that you're not. Acting, you are Frances Tophill. I enjoy gardening and that. I'm not trying to be anything else. I'm not saying you can't. I'm looking forward to your blockbuster. I was there near the beginning with an interview. I think we better wrap that up there, otherwise podcasts will go on forever and ever, and then people stop switching off after that. But thank you very much for doing it. And I hope your other half gets better soon, just so that you don't have to replace him as a cameraman. But you could have put what's your little dog called?
Rua.
Rua, you could have put a little camera on Rua, and it would have been an interesting viewing on the garden as well.
Get a view from the ground all the time, because all that dog does is lay down.
Yeah, we've got a little cocker spaniel, and to be honest, the worst part would probably be the camera would be taken away because her tail never stops wagging.
So, oh, really? Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it would end up probably camera moving slightly down the body and then probably just get a picture of him between her legs looking forward. So.
Well, I get the thing with Rua, when I got him, he's a rescue. So when I got him, he had his tail tucked in for about a month or two, never wagged, and now he wags all the time, and it's that lovely thing where you're like, oh, you've got happy.
I must admit, you can't beat a dog. They're always happy to see you. If I go out and walk up to my workshop and come back again, she'll come in, wag her tail and go and pick a toy up or a dirty old rag or something you don't want her to necessarily drag around the house.
Yeah,
she'll always do it, and it's the lovely thing is they actually don't care.
Yeah,
I mean, they love you unreservedly, and it doesn't matter if you've only been out the door for 5 seconds. It's kind of, oh, he's back again. Probably
because I know.
It's more the point, I think, is who feeds me? Anna feeds me. but it's a wonderful thing to do. Well, good luck. As I say, have you got anything upcoming? Because obviously, Chelsea Flower Show's on this year. So I'm hoping you'll be there doing something.
They've postponed it, I think.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of talk. Quite a lot of people are excited because obviously it's going to be autumn.
Yeah, there'll be a whole different range of plants.
Yeah, because normally it's quite early. You don't really get the full summer effect at Chelsea because it's too early quite soon. But all things are having to be forced on heavily. I know that there's a huge market on, because I know a couple of growers and they grow a huge amount of things. It's going to be at Chelsea. And if it's a big thing, well, all the garden centres will want it. So we need to grow 40,000 of them, because if that's plant of the show. But there is the side of things that, I mean, you obviously go to a lot of shows. So I don't particularly. Chelsea's up there. I sometimes wonder if something like a Hampton Court is maybe more for the normal gardener, shall we call it, because it's very high end. I mean, there's some fabulous gardens, but the budgets on them they're out of the planet. Only very, very rich people could afford it.
I'd say Chelsea's like an experience. I want to take my mum. She's never been to Chelsea. Yeah. She goes to Hampton Court. She always has done. But she's never been to Chelsea and she really wants to go. So I was going to take her this year, just gone. And then obviously it got cancelled. Yeah. I want to take my mum. It's an experience. It's jammed full of people. If you get there on press day, then you do get starstruck. That's fun.
All right. Okay.
I remember seeing Ringo there once. It's just like, I was mid-conversation. I was like, hang on, I just ran. but it is an experience, but it's not for every gardener, you know. It's like going to London Fashion Week, you know. You're not going to buy the clothes, you just get there for the experience. Whereas, as you say, Hampton Court, Malvern Flower Show is lovely. They're places where you can go and you can buy plants, you can buy wellies or coats or whatever it is that you want for gardening, a greenhouse, you know, outdoor furniture, anything like that. They're much more of a really lovely day out. Hampton Court's lovely because you can go and sit and have a cream tea on the lawn, and you know, I would say that it's flower shows aren't my natural environment, I have to say. I find them really interesting, but I prefer to be in a woodland.
It's a bit like the other, I remember I asked Toby Buckland once, I find it's just because you're a gardener, it's almost, you turn up something like that, it's kind of like, I'd be sitting there thinking, God, they're going to ask me a question and I'm not going to have a clue. And I said to him, oh, you're going on things like gardener's question time. Actually, I thought flower dew is another one. It takes a lot of bottle because you're basically opening yourself up to people asking you questions. And I mean, if you don't know, you've just got to say, don't know, pass it on to someone.
Oh, but that's so great. I have so much respect for people when they say I don't know. I have been told so much nonsense by gardeners before when you've asked something, and then you go away and you repeat it and you think, actually, that sounds like nonsense, and you look it up and it's nonsense.
It's nonsense,
so lovely when you ask someone something and they say, I actually don't know. And also I found that when I used to be in charge of apprentices, and if they would ask me, which they did all the time, loads of questions, and I learned so much more that year because I'd just have to say, I don't know, but I'll go and I'll look it up and I'll get back to you. And then I would research, you know, so important to be able to say when you don't know, especially in gardening, or else people are going to go and do something completely ridiculous.
And also, especially if you're on a TV or a radio phoning, you're soon going to get found out very quickly. He hasn't got, would you say he's a professional gardener? I don't think he knows anything.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've said to them, I said, I think you've got to A, you've got to know your stuff, and B, you just got to be honest. But I think that's where it comes down to. It's not a job. It's just your life. It does become your life to a certain extent. And I think it's the only way you can really probably get on it and actually succeed on, say, Gardener's Question Time. You basically got to live the damn thing.
Completely. The experiences that you've had feed into your knowledge all of the time.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Francis. I can tell you that your interview is going to be in the Kitchen Garden soon, so you'll have a whole new fan base for the vegetables. I hope that should go. So, and I'll let you know when it's coming out.
Yeah.
And go from there. And I shall keep watching your Instagram account. So I do enjoy you, because you're actually quite a keen photographer.
I love photography. Yeah. It's only on my phone. But I love it. I always have a film camera. That's my only camera. So doesn't really translate to Instagram very well.
Modern day cameras are a wonderful thing because you can spot something, and sometimes and digital cameras full stop. I think it's because you can spot something, and let's be honest, I've just got a fairly new phone. You can take pictures that only a few years ago would needed a very expensive camera. And to be honest, things like Instagram, that's what it is. It's here's something I've seen, relay it. You don't necessarily want to talk about it to the end of the world. It's just say it's a nice thing I saw. It's a picture from your memory, and you'll share it with other people.
And other people's things that they share too, you know. It's quite a nice community of people, all quite like-minded. And in these times, it's just knowing they're out there.
I think the vast majority of people are nice people. There are obviously some people there who you'll probably think, right, block them. But I think you'll find 99% of people in general across the world on the planet are all nice people and appreciate it. And it's only sharing. So it's a wonderful thing. Well, I should let you go now. And good luck for the year. And I look forward to seeing you at Chelsea on the thing. And if I do go to Hampton Court and you're there, I'll wait. And I'll also shout out. Frinky. At least you'll know that. Probably will make you look round and think, who the hell's that?
It will make me look round, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
When people call me, it could be anyone.
Well, I don't think I look like Alan, so I think you'll probably guess it's not Alan.
Yeah, I'll guess that one.
that's my inch, just get your attention for 5 seconds. Can I have a selfie and sign this? I shan't do that. Thank you very much, and... Yes, I'd love to say speak to you soon, but you never know. Hampton Court.
Yes.
I may see you in person.
Yeah. It'd be nice, wouldn't it? We'll all be let out into a crowd of people.
No, don't. You're doing yourself up there. You just build yourself up too much. But have a lovely rest of the day.
And
good luck with anything. And as you say, when's your new book coming out? Do you know yet?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm still writing it. So I think next year, maybe.
Yeah. They can turn it into the handbook version the year after. Well, that was one question I asked you. Have you ever thought about self-publishing your book?
Rubbish at all that stuff.
Well, the thing about self-publishing is, because I spoke to Charles Dowding, he did his latest one, Martin Fish, and he says what you do is you gain that thing, that control, because obviously publishers are only interested in what's the big thing going on at the moment in the world. We'll have a look about that. And they've actually found that you can, it may be something for future for you, but with self-publishing, obviously you've got that control that you can write the book you maybe always wanted to write.
Yeah.
But never could, because the publisher says, sorry, Francis, no one gives a monkeys about that anymore. We've moved on to that.
Yeah. It is nice writing them. It would be lovely to do. I've always wanted to do a thing about apples. Go around the country and find all the best apples on the roadsides and but
I'm a bit worried about the apples on the roadsides because this.
I know they'll be full of pollution, won't they? And I'll get run over trying to get.
Yeah, or just get run over. Or here's Frances eating an apple in a hospital bed after she ate a bad apple, stumbled down to the road, got taken out by a tractor. Well, I suppose it'll make for an entertaining viewing.
Yeah, it would definitely. People would buy it.
Everyone to think, yeah. Well, I had a chat the other day with Simon Ackroyd. He worked on lots of plays, very good, but of course he's a cider maker now. Very interesting to chat to him.
Really?
Not just cider, the amount of things you can actually make from the cider process. It's not just kind of like sweet ciders, there's champagnes you can make and all these other things you can use into them. So there you go, that's what you need. He moved because he worked on lots of big gardens for the RHS and that. Yeah, and he basically bought a cider making farm down in Devon.
Nice. So,
He does look very nice. I'm a bit jealous of him, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I'm a bit jealous too.
It does look very nice down there, to be honest. But anyway, thank you very much, and I'll let you go. And yes, maybe one day we shall see each other and wave.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I hope to see you at Chelsea or Hampton Court.
Yeah, more likely Hampton Court than Chelsea. Chelsea's not really my seat, to be honest. They'll probably turf me out and go, get out, Ruffy.
I don't blame you, to be honest. Funny old thing, but yeah.
Right, that's the quote. That's it. that's the last one. We'll cut that out, otherwise you'll never work at Chelsea again.
That's true.
No trouble. Thank you very much, Francis.
Take care. Have a nice evening.
Like, I don't know how to turn the screen off, so you'll have to do it first.
Okay, hang on. There we go. See you later.
Yeah. Bye bye now. Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe to Kitchen Garden Prime for just $4.99 per month. You'll be getting a whole lot for your plot, including an easy-read tablet and phone edition to read anywhere, anytime, exclusive access to 10 years of digital back issue archives, access to exclusive content from the online allotment, the Mudketeers website, plus the monthly print magazine will be delivered free to your door each month. Head to classicmagazines.co.uk/KGPrime to sign up today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.